Fresh controversy around the ongoing European migrant crisis deepens after hundreds of farm workers in Italy go on strike. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivienne Nunes. Good morning. Those on strike in Italy are mostly African migrants who are angry after 16 of their colleagues died in two road crashes this week. The protesters walked out of the fields in the southeastern part of the country, carrying trays of tomatoes and chanting, "We are not slaves." Many of the workers are at the mercy of recruiters linked to organised crime. This is Mohamed Doumbé Kieta from Guinea.
The first thing they ask for in the employment process is your papers. And if you don't have any, you're going to get fleeced by these robbers. And they're going to do what they want with you. They're going to use you like a machine. So that's why we have to accept all the conditions they give us, because we want to live with dignity.
Gia Piani Gianni is a journalist based in Italy for the New York Times.
They're a very easy labor force for farmers who have to do this seasonal labor of picking tomatoes and need a lot of manpower. They just pick them up from their homes in the ghettos in the morning. They have them working for 10, 12 hours a day. So these people will get about 20 euros a day. They have to pay 5 euros for transportation in these perilous vans with Bulgarian license plate, no Italian insurance. And there could be anything on the road. In this case, they slam against a lorry full of tomatoes, ironically. It's very easy for them to be prey to accidents and any kind of exploitation. So the road accidents were linked to the poor conditions that the migrants live in, work in, and even move around. Italy implemented a law 2 years ago against labor exploitation in agriculture for foreigners and Italians alike. But enforcing the law is very complicated in such a large area with 50,000 workers potentially involved during the peak season. The law has been neglected to some extent. Some of the owners of this field have mafia ties. It's a matter of making a conscientious decision of cracking down on the phenomenon.
Gia Piani Gianni. Let's do the numbers. Global stocks are mostly mixed. The Russian ruble dropped to its lowest level since 2016 against the US dollar after American sanctions were enacted yesterday. The Turkish lira is seeing more pain, trading at a fresh record low. Investors continue to fret over souring relations with the US over a pastor detained in Turkey on espionage charges. Swedish meatballs and DIY furniture officially land in India today as IKEA opens its first store in the southern city of Hyderabad. It's the first step in the company's plan to invest $1.5 billion in the country over the next decade. Jesper Broden, IKEA Group's chief executive, explains what the challenges will be in the Indian market.
The infrastructure, the logistical aspects of a network, India is large. So even when we have opened our first four stores, they are far away from each other. It's not a small country. Until you reach a certain economy of scale, it will be a stretch for us. But we will try to endure and we will try to be long term.
But how will the company's famed do-it-yourself furniture go over with people generally unaccustomed to the practice of self-assembly?
We will argue a little bit with our customers to say, would you please consider the do-it-yourself model? Buy the flat pack, you save money with unnecessary transport cost. You have the lowest price possible for a good piece of furniture. But we're not naive, so also in other markets we offer services for home deliveries, for assembly, for kitchen installation. And in India, we assume that that need will be slightly more than in an average market. So here we have signed up with people that will be able to actually get great jobs in serving customers with assembly.
Jesper Broden. Now, did ads like this make you crave breakfast cereal as a kid?
Come say good morning to three little guys who make Kellogg's Rice Krispies come alive.
Snap, Crackle and Pop characters Kellogg's has relied on for decades to sell Rice Krispies cereal. But here in the UK, the government has cracked down on advertising targeted at children, and Kellogg's and KFC have found themselves in hot water. Stephen Woodford heads up the industry group, the Advertising Association.
Well, they've fallen foul of the rules around advertising what's colloquially known as junk food in the UK. Those rules are very stringent. The UK's got the toughest rules in the world. In the case of KFC, they placed one poster too near a school. You're not allowed to place ads for these sort of foods in any media where more than one in four of the audience are children. Kellogg, it was a different issue. They had a variant of their Cocoa Pops brand, which is a chocolatey cereal that in fact was low in sugar. but the ad was considered sufficiently close to the master brand ad to, in effect, be promoting that, and they were asked to withdraw the ad.
That represents a huge change in how companies can market their products. Does that mean we're having to see companies go back to the drawing board and create whole new advertising campaigns, perhaps without the animals and characters that we've grown used to?
So for 10 years in the UK, you've not been able to advertise these foods on television. And last year, those rules were extended to cover all media. And in a sense, that coincides with, I think, a wider societal shift to eat more healthily, to worry about diet, to try and tackle the sort of global challenge around obesity. So most manufacturers are looking at lower sugar and healthier options and promoting those.
So does that mean that characters like Snap, Crackle and Pop for Rice Krispies, for instance, are no longer part of Kellogg's advertising strategy?
So you can only use them to target over 16s. In a sense, the rules are getting ever tighter.
Isn't this just too much intervention by a nanny state?
I think the state does have a role. We are seeing a societal problem about growing obesity and we have to tackle those things. So I think there is a role for government, there is a role for industry, and there's a role for parents. I think parents are the most important part of this.
These companies didn't face any kind of financial penalty. Should these rules be more strictly enforced?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you were in one of those companies, you would be feeling the pressure of this today. It's been lead story on the news here. So for the most part, firms stay very well clear of breaking these rules because of the sanction is, in effect, the publicity that comes from programmes like this.
Stephen Woodford, head of the UK's advertising agency. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.